A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, Gompies, and welcome to Rhymes and Hits Volume Pod. My name is Josh Earle, and this is the podcast where we talk about the greatest compilation series this country has ever produced, Rhymes and Hits, and special guest this week, someone who's actually on the compilation. Can you please welcome from the band Regurgitator, it's Quan Yeomans. Yay! Hey, mate.
How are you, mate?
Very good. Thanks for doing this.
Oh, you're welcome.
We only met 5 minutes ago.
Yeah.
We had a pretty intense conversation about raising children beforehand, yeah. But that's all right. We'll be fine.
It's been my MO, really.
So we're talking about Volume 26, Side B. So the year was 1998.
Was it?
Do you remember 98?
Not really clearly.
It was a really big year for your band.
I guess so. Maybe 98 was starting to get a little sour for me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we'd done a lot of touring by 98.
Yeah. Well, we talked about Black Bugs in a previous episode.
Right.
And I discovered something, and I want to know if it's true, because sometimes I find stuff out online and then I read later and I'm like, that's not true.
That's all AI stuff, don't worry about it.
Is it true that after Two Playing, you toured with Helmet?
Yes.
And that scared you?
Helmet and the Melvins.
Great, oh, okay, great.
So it was true. A pretty intense, macho lineup.
Yeah.
And I loved Helmet. I love Meantime Records.
Yeah.
But yeah, touring with them was like, I got a glimpse into the military kind of mind.
Yeah.
Because it was like that. It was like touring with a military band. It was really intense.
Because Melvins, I used to like Melvins, especially the song Honey Bucket.
Right.
It's probably the most.
I wasn't a massive fan of Melvins, but yeah. I was impressed with them live. But yeah, we just felt so out of place on that tour. It was just weird.
I can't remember the lead singer's name, but he looks like Miriam Margles.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah. They're cool.
So that was... When did you do that? 95, 96?
I'm really bad with dates, okay. But it would have been around when you said, just after Two Playing, I think. One of the first big American tours we ever did.
Yeah, great. So, this is 98. So, you've got a song on this one. We'll talk about that song later.
Mm-hmm.
But what I want to... Were you asked about being on the compilation before? Do you get a say if you are allowed on or not allowed on?
I think we probably would have been asked. We had a fairly good relationship with our... record company via our manager, obviously, who was the major buffer. So he may have asked and we may have just gone, whatever.
Yeah.
But a lot of the times they probably threw a lot of stuff at us.
Yeah.
And we were just like, oh God. Yeah, just one of those out of 10 of those is fine. Just whatever.
Because it was a hard time for musicians then in terms of the whole notion of selling out, and not saying this is selling out, but did you get offered ads?
Yeah, we got offered Coke ads and all sorts of stuff, and we said no to a lot of that stuff for sure. It is weird, that selling out notion, because it doesn't really exist now.
No,
right?
It doesn't.
You've got to sell out, otherwise you just die, right?
Exactly. Well, I think Courtney Love said selling out just means you sold tickets. That's all.
Yeah,
people
sure.
Want to come.
Like, yeah, totally.
So, all right, we're going to kick this off. So it's Side B. We've just finished Side A. The last song on Side A was The Cause.
Oh, yes.
Their song, their cover of Dreams, the Todd Terry remix.
Dreams, as in the Fleetwood Mac song?
Yeah.
Yep. Great song.
And now we're moving. We're still in the same region. We're going into the UK, not Ireland. So this is the first time on the podcast for this band. This is a song that sounds like something Ricky Gervais would use in his post-extras TV shows.
Right.
I don't know if you watched any of them. He clearly is padding for time. He's like, all right, let's put a nice song on and we'll have me walking with a dog. This is the Lighthouse Family and their song, High.
When you're close to tears, remember someday it'll all be over. One day we're gonna get.
Oh, yeah, okay, I know this.
You know this one?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was the number one here in Australia.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow. Is that the general gist of 100% hits, if they made it to number one or close?
Not always.
Really?
Very big in Hungary. All the songs got really big in Hungary. I don't know why. It's just this some kind of weird thing that so often when I look at it, the songs on this album.
Maybe they had like a distro thing going on there.
I don't know. I don't know how it works. I would want someone from either Polydor or EMI to come in and actually say how they put them together.
Yeah, right.
It doesn't really make any sense.
What is this obsession you have with this 100% hits thing?
It was great. It was when you...
No, is it something that you did, you bought as a child?
Yeah, I bought them. It was because, you know, CDs were expensive.
Yeah.
And you didn't want to have to, you know, waste your money on an album that had like...
You wanted a good
two
playlist.
Good songs and like 10 fillers. So I was like, I'll
you were that kind of guy. Okay.
money was tight. Okay, all right. That's all we're going to play this on.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
Actually, high, being high and using the word high seemed to be a bit of a thing back then.
Yeah.
Well, I watched the end of... what the hell was that program last night? I don't know, but they use that Soup Dragons song, I'm Free.
Oh, yeah.
Similar kind of thing, I'm High, I'm Free. That was a really kind of big vibe.
Well, this is from their second album. Their first album had a song called Lifted. So it's the same kind of thing. With these guys, though, I don't know. High can be drugs, but with these guys, it seems like it's religious.
Religious, yeah,
for sure. I don't know if it's because the Lighthouse family sounds like it's something that the Jehovah's Witnesses,
like
the magazine,
like
they give
you. It sounds like a cult, doesn't it, really, when you think about it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the opening line is very morbid. Yeah. Like, it's all going to be over soon.
Well, so they're from Newcastle. They're just a duo. It's Tunde Bawu and Paul Tucker. Now, Paul Tucker wrote the lyrics for the song.
Right.
So this is the second single from their second album called Postcards from Heaven.
Okay.
Another, yep.
Yeah.
And the first album had been a bit of a surprise hit. They didn't really expect it to go that great, but it went very, very well. This time, they had a bit of writer's block. It's that classic thing of going...
The Sophomore Record.
You have the whole life to write your first one, and then a year to write your second one.
Mm-hmm.
And normally, so when all the hits on this album, when I look into it, normally what I see is people go, oh, this song took me 10 minutes to write.
Yeah.
This one is not one of those, which is good.
Oh, really?
It took him 8 months to write the lyrics. They had the bones of it.
8 months.
8 months. But then what he would
do... That's like Leonard Cohen kind of territory.
What he would do, he would show people the song and they're like, oh, that's a hit. Just get some lyrics and that's a hit. And because everyone was saying that's a hit, it built the stakes.
That's
and he was
awful.
Like, I can't finish this song because everyone's saying it's going to be a hit.
Yeah, you don't want that.
How often, like, with Regurgitator, do you... Because there's, two main songwriters?
Basically, yeah.
Do you show each other before it's finished or wait till it's finished or what's the writing process there?
It probably was a little bit different back then. Certainly when we were working on Unit, which is the main record that we released, it was very kind of you'd come into the studio with a new song and then you'd go check this out and then it would kind of get you more vibe to work on your own stuff. So it was a slightly competitive kind of vibe.
I think that's a really healthy way to do it as well.
Yeah, definitely. I don't remember playing it to too many other people outside of the band. That seems like a nightmare to me.
I always think with the pressure of like, because you read about the Strokes, who Julian Casablancas was the main songwriter for the first two albums.
Mm.
And then in the break between the second and third album, three of the members released solo albums.
Yeah.
And it's like him going, why am I writing all these songs for the band if you guys have sitting on these songs that we could have used?
Right.
And so I think that was the beginning of them, even though they're still going.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a happy marriage. That
band. Right. Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah. So he said with this 8 months, finally finished it. Like they had deadlines and then it went on and it was the big hit. Number one in Australia, number four in the UK. So it was bigger here than it was in the UK.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's how it works sometimes. All right, we're going to move on. Okay, this is...
Well, at least, I mean, everyone was saying it was a hit, and it was.
Yeah, it worked out well for him.
Did he feel like stupid for spending so much time on those lyrics?
Well, he said it was really personal. He said his wife had lost it. She was pregnant and they lost the pregnancy.
Oh, okay.
And so he was also going through, like... their first album was a hit. They were touring, meant to be living the dream.
Yeah.
And he was dealing with all these things.
Yeah,
going,
sure.
This is not what I thought it was going to be. Okay. And I've got all this pressure now from the label to follow it up.
Hence the existential dread through the song.
All right. Speaking of someone else who wasn't going through a good time at this time of their life, this is Richard Ashcroft and his band, The Verve. Now, you said you hadn't heard any of these songs. I'm sure you've heard this song.
I've definitely heard that Lighthouse family song.
Yeah. All right. So this is Lucky Man by The Verve. Thank you.
It's a long intro.
It's a long intro. You realise how long it is when you're in a room with someone you've met before. Yeah. Where do I look? Where do I look?
Exactly. It's like being in an elevator. Who was the producer of these?
Good question. I don't know. Do you like the sound of it?
No, I mean, it's very clean. I like guitar tones. He's got a great voice.
He does have a good voice. He's a very good front man. He looks cool.
This doesn't ring any bells.
See, this was their third single from Urban Hymns, which was a huge...
Yeah, it was massive.
Huge album, mainly Bittersweet Symphony, but... and then Sonnet, I think. No, Drugs Don't Work was the other song we played so far.
I remember those
but
two.
Sonnet was also one as well, which is also another big song. But yeah, we'll just play the chorus then.
Yeah, yeah, I remember the chorus.
Yeah.
No, I don't think I ever heard the song. It sounds like a million other songs, though.
I know, that, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Anyway, so that is the third single from Urban Hymns. Now, we talked about last time with the Drugs Don't Work that Urban Hymns was going to be a solo record for Richard Ashcroft.
Oh, is that right?
And in the last, like, 11th hour, he got cold feet and went, fuck, I just need some fresh ears on this.
Yeah.
And invited the band back. They'd already broken up.
Oh, wow.
Invited them all back in. Yeah, I've got some songs. And then they kind of just added a little bit.
Yeah, nice.
Then they went on the road again and he realized, this is why we broke up. We can't be a band.
Wow.
And so this was like a huge album. They only got to enjoy it really for a year and then they broke up after that.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, they got back together again, like, you know, bands do that. Like, they're like, all right,
we haven't done that yet.
Well, that's great. You guys have been the whole time. But yeah, but you know, the whole nostalgia tour thing where people are like, going, all right, we can sell some records here.
Mm.
And then they realize, oh no, we need to break up. The Fleetwood Mac story, really. Mm-mm. But yeah. Bono, though, said in an interview that this is one of the six songs he wished he'd written.
Really?
Yeah. The others are Live Forever by Oasis.
Okay.
Unfinished Sympathy by Massive Attack. Bob Dylan and Sam Shepherd's Brownsville Girl, the last song I'll ever sing by Gavin Friday. I don't know this song. And All Right Love by M. Griner. I don't know that song either.
Okay. Yeah. Fine. Bono.
Do you have any songs that you wish you'd written?
Yeah, sure. But it's more of like a time travel thing.
Yeah.
Where I could, you know, go back and just write these songs and collect all of the royalties and the fame for it.
Have you watched The Last of Us, the HBO series?
No, I tried to watch it. I enjoyed the setup, but then I kind of got a bit like, oh, this is
another...
Well,
the setup's great. The setup is like 2003?
Yeah.
Yeah, the world pretty much...
Yeah, sure.
There's a virus goes on, we shut down.
Yeah,
I did research into that. So the Killers song, Mr. Brightside, was meant to be released the weekend after. So that song would have been pressed... would have been sitting in a warehouse somewhere ready to go and the world didn't hear it.
Oh, and they use it.
No, they don't use it, but I was like saying to my friend, okay, say you're running away from the mushroom people.
Right.
You find a warehouse full of CDs and one of them's then. Do you listen to it and go, oh, can I steal this song? Can I go around and say, I wrote this song? Because I was thinking about what songs I would like if I could write a song.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, just to be an asshole, if I wrote Under the Bridge by Red Hot Chili Peppers and then never released it, so that maybe they wouldn't be a big band. Maybe I could sabotage.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I read Rick Rubin's latest book.
Oh, yeah.
Which is great. And, I really appreciate how, you know, Zen it is and Buddhist. And I like, there's quite a few takeaways I've got during, being this current creative process that I'm in has been quite helpful.
Yeah.
But yeah, look at the bands that he's made big, particularly the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Isn't there a great quote from Nick Cave?
Yeah.
Every
time he turns on the radio, he goes, what is this shit? And it's always the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
That's it. Yeah, that's right. It's strange how the longevity... I mean, one of the biggest first tours we ever did was with those guys.
Yeah.
And they were wonderful.
I reckon,
nice guys. But it's just their music just went from okay to really, really shocking. Not to shit on them.
I mean, I'm always amazed with Flea, because Flea's in every documentary.
He's a lovely dude.
He seems like he's cool.
He's really lovely.
And the stuff he was doing with Tom York, I thought was really cool. And he's an amazing bass player.
Yeah.
And they're all great musicians. Yeah. Just that, get them together and that funk, oh, not for me.
Yeah, I mean, I was obsessed with that, the first couple of records, Mother's Milk in particular.
Yeah.
And then Blood Sugar. And then after that, I was like, what happened here?
Yeah.
And I mean, it didn't age particularly well either.
No.
But honestly, their new material is just like, wow.
So to get back to the positive, so the song, I've thought two songs I wish I wrote. So Common People by Pulp, I think that's a great song.
That is a good song.
And also having grown up working class, I'm like, yeah, this is, I love this.
For me, it's pretty much any song on 69 Love Songs.
Now you're talking.
Yeah. I mean, that guy is an incredible lyricist. Stephen Merritt is great songwriter.
One of the best, and also one of the best interviews as well, because he's so, it's like he's playing a character. He's so grumpy.
Yeah.
I love it. And that, because that came out in 99.
Yeah.
And we talked about last week with Jen Fricker. And I had, that was one of the albums that I played. I flogged it in 99. That and The Flaming Lips, Soft Bulletin, were just two albums that, when I think of 99, I was like, oh, these are the albums. The other song I thought, oh, Heya by Outkast, because it's also another timeless song. It's a great pop song.
Sure. Yeah. Sure.
All right. We're going to move on.
Probably for me, it would have been like a Justin Timberlake.
Oh, and just get those royalties?
Well, I do actually, I was obsessed with his JT, what's it called? The Justified record.
Is that the one with I was Sexy, like, Back on it?
No, the one before that actually.
Yeah. Cry Me a River?
Yeah, that's the song.
Yeah.
That is a killer song.
It is a good song. So it's funny, so that was when I really noticed that pop music was being appreciated more because I think Pitchfork gave that their number one album for the year.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
That's unusual.
It was, yeah, because it was like, and it was almost like, are you guys doing this to be contrary or are you doing it because you really believe it? And I think Time has fared well.
Yeah, totally.
It's a great album.
It is a really good record. Yeah.
All right, moving on. Now, this is a guy who is one of these guys who I think is bigger in Australia than anywhere else, even though he's not from Australia. This is Ben Harper. And his song, Mum Is Trippin', but it is the Freedom remix. So here we go.
Okay. Oh, so it's actually from Freedom Remix. Whose idea was that, I wonder?
I doubt it was his.
Tell me why you're so uptight, out of your head, and ain't talking right. Can you tell me? I thought you'd stopped it there for a second. Damn. Out of touch and can't relate. Mama's tripping. Okay.
I mean,
no, I never heard. I don't think I've ever heard this.
I remember this being played a bit on Triple J.
Yeah, right.
But I don't know if it was this version or the actual original version that's on the album.
I was never really a fan of Ben Harper. Like, new blues stuff kind of just washed over me. I didn't really... It passed me by.
I had a flatmate who loved him. He was, he was a surfer as well, so he was into all that kind of stuff. And it was just like, I just can't find an angle in to this.
Yeah.
So anyway, we'll talk about this song. So this is from the album The Will to Live. I said he's bigger in Australia, but he also very big in France.
Oh, okay.
So that album sold 300,000 copies in France.
Wow.
I don't think it sold that many in the US where he's from. So it samples George Michael's Freedom 90.
Yep.
That's it. Because the reason it's called Freedom 90 is because Wham had a song called Freedom, which sounds very different to...
Oh, right. One.
Yeah, so he was like, all right.
I didn't know that.
Yep. It was from his album Listen Without Prejudice, which Enemy reviewed... simply by saying "listen without speakers."
That's harsh.
I reckon it's because it's got Freedom 90. That's a good song, even though if you don't like George Michael, you can go, all right, well, it's Freedom 90.
Oh, I love George Michael. He's amazing.
But I think at the time people were like, oh, he's popular. We're like,
sure, that sellout thing.
I reckon it was just an easy win for the writer, going, oh, this is set me up.
Yeah,
I can just knock this one out of the park.
Yeah.
In 2021, Rolling Stone said Freedom 90 was 126 in their list of 500 greatest songs of all time.
Okay.
I don't know how they do these things, but it's like, it's so funny when you think 126 and then you go, okay, so how many Beatles songs before this? How many Rolling Stone? And you just go through like that and you go, there's no way it's 126.
Yep.
Okay. So it came in at number 86 in the Hottest 100 in 98.
This particular song.
This song. Okay. Right. 86. Do you know how many songs you had in the Hottest 100 that year, 98?
No.
It was your best year.
Oh, was it?
You had six songs.
Six?
You had more songs than anyone else.
Wow.
In the world, Kwan. No one else in the world had more songs than you.
Wow.
We'll go through them later. Okay. But yeah, this is another one of those guys who's like, I'm sure he's a delight to hang out with.
Yeah, he's probably lovely.
Yeah, I'm sure I never met him. Like, really cool and nice, and I'm just I can't get
him. He seems like one of those guys that Ben would have known, like my bass player. He probably would have smoked weed with him like at some point.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. They had a nice time. Had a jam maybe.
Because I did drum circle. So him and Michael Franti are the same to me. It's like that whole thing. It's
dreadlocked.
Of like, yeah. Or more that they're always in Australia. Mm-hmm. They play music that people will go, oh, fucking chill. And it's like, okay.
They seem like they should have been born in Byron Bay or exactly. just live there.
I'm sure they spend many time there.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, we're going to move on. Okay, it's the Thinking Person Spice Girls. This is All Saints.
Oh, yeah.
And I Know Where It's At. I reckon you'll like this one.
Well, they're Super Beatles. Yeah, I don't mind. It's pretty good.
It's a good pop song.
I don't think I've ever heard it though.
I didn't think I had either. I definitely remember Never Ever.
Yeah.
Which we talked about 2 weeks ago. I'll talk a bit more about where this falls in the chronological order.
I like this kind of vocal phrasing from this period.
Yeah.
What was their other hits?
Never Ever.
How does that one go?
It starts with the... I can just play it for you. That's the easier way to do it. All right. You'll know it from probably the start, I'd say. So, sorry, listeners. You heard this 2 weeks ago. Look, I liked it, so you're going to listen to it again.
A few questions that I need to know. How you could ever hurt me so.
This goes for a minute, this talking intro.
Oh, yeah. Don't do that to the listeners.
I'll get it.
I'm going out of my mind.
I'm just skipping
all the answers to my questions. I have to find my head
spinning. Oh, yeah.
This was a big hit.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
Back to I Know Where It's At. So originally the band were called All Saints 1975. They had no success with that name. They were dropped by their label, lost a member. Then the Appleton sisters from Canada joined them and they signed to London Records. They dropped the 1975 part. Boom, huge hits.
1975 was clearly a bummer.
So a few people last week, oh no, 2 weeks ago, told me that I was too nice to the band and the song Never Ever, but I'm sorry, it's my opinion. I liked it. Okay, so this was actually the first single from the album in the UK. And in this country, they swapped it around. So they had Never Ever go first and then they had this one second.
Okay.
Yeah. This got to number four. So it's still a big song.
Yeah.
And it contains that... that kind of first bit is the sample from Steely Dan's The Fez.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Which I'm not a Steely Dan fan, but I listen to it. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's completely, you've just ripped off, not yeah. ripped off, but you've just used a very quite prominent sample from that song in your song. That's fine. So got to 12 here in Australia, got top 20 in six other countries.
Mm.
They got a lot of good press from the music reviewers. But they pretty much got good press because they would use that to bag out the Spice Girls.
Oh, I see.
And it was that time where in the UK, because they just had like the whole Blur Oasis rivalry. Yep. They're like, all right, this is the new one. We can get All Saints and Spice Girls fighting each other.
Sure.
And unfortunately, and the bands have said this, that they actually bought into it.
Mm.
And Mel B apparently beat up Shaznay Lewis, the lead singer, in a bathroom, ripped her weave out of her head.
Ouch.
Yeah. But now Mel C got on stage with All Saints not that long ago.
Oh, that's nice.
Because they're still going, yeah.
That's lovely. They're still going.
They're still going, yeah. Wow. They had a lot of time off, but they're still, they're now back together.
That's good.
Rigojo, you wouldn't have had any beefs with bands. I can't imagine. I always think the Australian music industry, especially in the
tism.
90s.
Maybe Tism.
Oh, what did, because they had a song where they include.
No, we have faux beefs with those guys. Yeah. It's never been, you know, fake meat.
Damien was on my last podcast.
Yeah, they're so sweet. Yeah, they're sweet dudes.
Yep. He was funny though, because he said, oh, just don't bring up Tism. And then in the first minute, he brought up Tism. I'm like, what's going on? Like, I've written all these questions. I'm not about to. So they debuted this song on the National Lottery Live.
The National Lottery?
Yeah, a TV show.
Yeah, right.
Where they drew the lotto numbers.
Oh.
And I don't know why this country never did the same thing. That would be a good show.
Yeah.
An hour-long show. commercial television, there's six segments.
Yeah.
There's five ad breaks in between. So you've got six segments. Every segment.
New song.
Draw a number. There you go. Number 17. Then have a guest interview them. Do a song. Do a like stand up, whatever.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to have a break. We'll come back with more numbers.
I feel like you've already pitched this to people.
Well, I haven't, but it should be like, and at the end of the show, someone wins like millions of dollars.
Sure.
If you win, call in and then everyone's got their phone camera. Just we'll put it on TV. You can see them. That's good TV.
Yeah.
That's.
People, I don't know what good TV is.
People wonder why people aren't watching free-to-air TV these days. That's why, because that show's not on there. All right. I think that is all we need to say about All Saints.
Yeah, I don't feel one way or the other about it.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Okay, moving on. This, I can't believe we've not talked about this band before on the show. And this is such a weird song for them to have first on it because they had massive hits with Barbie Girl and Dr. Jones.
Oh, yeah, Aqua.
Yeah, this is Aqua, and this is their song, Turn Back Time.
This is not the Sher song, no.
No, I thought it was. I thought it was going to be a crazy cover, but...
Oh, lovely.
So different to what the others are. It's almost like got a M People kind of vibe to it.
Yeah.
Do you remember this at all?
No.
Have you ever seen the movie Sliding Doors?
Yeah.
This is in Sliding Doors.
Oh.
Apparently the film clip, I didn't watch it, but it has like Gwyneth Paltrow kind of in it.
Oh.
Like bits in the film.
Doesn't ring any bells.
Wait till the chorus. Maybe the chorus will remind you.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it does sound like every other song.
It's definitely bringing images of Gwyneth Paltrow back to me. I must have heard it at that in that movie, probably. It is pretty kind of subdued for them, though.
Yeah, it really is. It's almost like they were like, oh, we've got to show people we can actually...
Do serious kind of music.
Do, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Also, you can't jump on stage for that long. We need a song. We can take a break.
Was it successful, this track?
Well, this is the sixth single from their debut album.
Six. Whoa, that's going deep.
So many. I mean, I think Shania Twain had 8.
Oh, really?
On her,
that's like the whole record, isn't it?
Yeah.
Jesus.
I think there was 11 songs and, yeah, 8 were singles. So this uses a Pet Shop Boys sample from their song Heart. They had Dr. Jones and Barbie Girl were huge hits, especially Barbie Girl.
Yeah.
So big.
Yeah.
Actually, there was a lawsuit from Mattel, the makers of Barbie, who tried to sue them.
God.
Because of the suggestive lyrics. So like, hey, you're sexualizing Barbie.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do that. But the case got dismissed in 2002, and the judge said, and this is a direct quote from the judge, both parties are advised to chill.
That's the kind of thing you want to hear from a judge.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Aqua are Denmark's most successful ever group.
They're from Denmark.
Yeah.
I didn't even know that.
Selling 33 million album copies worldwide.
There you go.
This song went to number one in the UK, got to number 10 here in Australia.
Okay.
So the UK loved them. So
yeah,
absolutely huge.
Oh, I remember how huge they were, definitely.
Yeah, Lene Nystrom was the lead singer. She's one of the first famous people I ever saw live in real life.
Oh, is that right?
Like, yeah, just she was... So I'm from Tassie.
Yeah.
But in 98, my girlfriend at the time moved over to Melbourne. So I came to visit her. I was watching Recovery that morning and Aqua were guests on Recovery.
Oh, wow.
Which was, I don't know.
We did that many times, actually.
Yeah. You weren't on that episode.
No, we wouldn't have been.
So I saw her on that. She had like dyed red, like bright red hair.
Okay.
And then I went into the Melbourne city centre and I saw her walk out of an Australia souvenir store. And I stared at her so much. Lena, if you're listening, I do hope you are listening. I apologize if in 1998 a 16-year-old boy stared at you.
I think she probably would have been pretty immune to that by then.
But just going into it, I did, looking back, going into an Australia store, like just buying some, like buying a soft koala sure. or kangaroo or something like that, the things you do, like
yeah.
you've just done morning TV.
Mm-hmm.
Doing recovery, what? Because it was so early.
It was super early.
When I think it started at
and
9
every
o'clock.
Band was like hungover and tired at that stage.
I mean, it was so important to someone like me who was 16 living in a small town in Tasmania.
Yeah, it was a great program. Just going, it was really cool.
I've rewatched some interviews now. Oh my God, I cannot believe this. It's so laid back. It's
I know,
the
right?
Most, like, it's great. And it was of the time. It was that thing of like, oh, you can't show people that you're trying. Even though the sets all looked amazing.
Yeah, yeah. They
did
they
you ever did. Get to keep any of the sets? Because they would have just destroyed them afterwards.
No, I don't know. I don't know what happened to them, but no, we didn't.
Yeah.
We never laid claim. Like I said, everyone was so bloody tired. We just wanted to get out of there.
Oh,
we spoke to Dylan recently, actually. Well, not that recently, for a documentary that did about the show, which was cool. It was lovely to meet him again.
It's funny, because when I was on Spicks and Specs, so the original used to do Countdown... like tribute shows.
Oh yeah.
Like Adam would dress up as Molly Meldrum.
Yeah, right. There.
And when I hosted, I was like, can we do a recovery special?
Oh yeah.
And have Adam as the enforcer and Ella as Jane Gazzo, and I could just get an eyebrow ring. And they're like, I don't think people really remember the show that well. And I'm like, what are you talking about? This, like, there's a whole generation of people who are like, this was the show they watched. For those who weren't old enough to go out, or
yeah,
if you
totally.
Were hungover, you'd turn it on.
And it was just so raw. That was the best thing about it. Like, it was super raw.
Well, they used to make comics do stand-up on it.
God, I don't remember that.
Yeah, but they would have them, so they were facing away from the audience and do it to camera, and so the audience of kids were in the background.
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea.
No one ever got laughs. The only one who did it well... was Dave O'Neill, because I remember he had a little dictaphone with laughter on it.
Oh, that's
and he'd
weird.
Do his joke. He'd go, oh, my kids are in the car, and just put the dictaphone to the microphone and get laughed. And then people would laugh at that. He was the only one who... He figured it out.
Yeah, that's smart.
All right. We're going to take a break.
All right.
We're going to come back after these messages.
Oh, great. Cool.
We're back. Okay. We have what a break. okay, we're back now. Oh, now this is great. I love it, because I didn't have to do any research for this, because the writer of the song is right here. Now, this is your song.
Oh, is it?
This is Polyester Girl.
Okay.
Do you mind if I listen to a minute of it?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, good. I thought I'd ask.
So flat.
See, when Angie was on as well, listen to her show, her song, she was like, oh, I really should have had another take of that one. Oh, like, it sounds great.
And I like it. It's just so funny that it was such a popular song, and it's the singing is just, a lot of that record is really bad. Because I used to write all of my songs out of my range.
Yeah.
I didn't understand how to vocalize properly. So I was just like in the dark most of the time, and most of the stuff is in the wrong key for me.
When you did it live, did you have to transpose it down or up? Or?
No, actually, well, that's a good question. Because I can sing this reasonably well now, but I think I've gotten better at singing, so...
We'll stop it there. Sorry.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah. Because it was a real departure from sound, from the first album to this album.
Yeah.
How nervous were you about releasing this? Because, look, can I just say, huge fan, okay? I love this album so
thanks.
Much.
Thanks.
But... I was also a big fan of 2Plane, and I was like, I'm going, I can...
You can travel
both.
With it. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
But as a band, you must have been going, oh, are people really going to go for this?
I don't think we really thought it through.
Great.
I think we just were like, ah, fuck it.
Yeah.
Just do it. Who cares? And that particular song was just like so ridiculous. None of us thought that it would do well at all, being picked as a single, but the record company were like, oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And we're like, really? Okay.
Even going to the other guys in the band, or were you all kind of on board going, oh, we're going in a new direction?
Yeah, I think we were just like, whatever, you know, just whatever works, go for it. Who cares?
What kind of stuff were you influenced by? What were you listening to that kind of made you go in this direction?
Well, I mean, like all of our records, there's multiple directions.
Yeah.
There was definitely an 80s influence. But when I listened to the record, because we're doing a nostalgic tour now, it doesn't really sound that 80s influence to me. There's only a couple of tracks that are like that. Polyester Girl sounds like It does sound like a 90s pop song almost, yeah, but not quite there.
See, I was trying to explain it. I had a guest on the other week who was a lot younger who didn't really like, I was like going in the 90s, like, was you stayed in your lane. It was like, if you like punk, you like punk.
Yeah, sure.
And any electronic instrument, people would go, oh, that's techno, even though it wasn't anything to do with techno.
Yeah.
And it was because bands like You and Girling, and I said this about, I think, were ahead of your time. And I reckon in today's kind of world where everyone listens, like, they just stream, so they listen to whatever they want, and they can jump genres so much more.
Yeah.
I think, not that it wasn't accepted, you guys were, like, super, super big in this country.
Yeah, but the audience, like I said, are more trained for that now, that their ears are trained to listen to a multitude of genres.
And I think you guys played it super, super smart by having the first song, I Like Your Old Stuff Better Than Your New Stuff, kind of going, well, we're aware that it's changed.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Yeah. It was a conscious decision, mainly from a crowd perspective. We were just getting a bit tired of the aggression of the crowds.
Yeah.
A lot of male, we attracted a lot of a male dominant crowd, yeah, especially the first record was much heavier.
Yeah.
And we were just getting a bit tired of the fights and the bullshit.
Yeah, I remember Cram in an interview for, there was a documentary made called Dead Set.
Oh, yeah.
Followed Spiderbait, Something for Kate. I think maybe Tim Rogers was interviewed for it as well. But in that, Cram was like going, yeah, he's got friends who just don't want to come and see Spiderbait anymore because the audience is too aggressive.
And yeah,
just
yeah.
Shout out Old Man Sam and just fight. And
yeah.
That was...
There was a bit of that going on.
Yeah.
And then Grimstone came along and took most of those fans off us, which was nice. And we had this kind of record that, you know, girls could kind of like enjoy parts of and boys could enjoy parts of and, you know.
Yeah.
It was nice.
Well, as a 16, 17-year-old kid in Tassie, I very much enjoyed it. But I wasn't alone. So we mentioned that you had six songs in the Hottest 100 that year. So this was one of them. This got to 26.
Okay.
It beat I Like Your Old Stuff Better Than Your New Stuff by one place.
Okay.
And Happy Lands, Don't You Know Who I Am by two places.
Oh, right, okay.
So at one point you had three songs in a row.
Yeah, wow.
On the charts.
Oh, weird.
Yeah. Don't You Know Who I Am, by the way, is the name of my old podcast.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, and I used... 12 seconds of your song every year.
Wow.
So,
thanks for that.
Expect royalty. Yeah.
I always do.
So this is the top 10 that year. And I reckon, I think Double J do this occasionally as well. They do like a revisionist kind of top 10.
Right.
Because the highest placed song you had was the song formerly known as number six.
Yep.
I would argue either number one or number two now. Okay, this is my opinion. Okay,
yeah.
you can disagree if you want to. So number one, we'll go from 10. Okay, so number 10, Save the Day, The Living End.
Okay,
your song's better. Okay, Heavy Heart, You're My. I could see why that would go number one.
Okay,
that's a nice.
I don't actually recall that song of theirs.
It's a ballad. It's a bit like Please Don't Ask Me to Smile. But
yep.
Powderfinger, The Day You Come at number 8.
Sure.
Harpoon by Jebediah. 7.
Good tune.
Very Australian.
Yep.
You guys, number 6. Korn, Got the Life, number 5.
Korn,
yes. That's where we were heading.
When
good choice getting out of the aggression.
Yeah,
it's
going to
get very, very aggressive after that. Celebrity Skin by Hole, number 4.
Okay.
Girls Like That, Don't Go for Guys Like Us by Custard, number 3.
Wow, that's cool.
Cigarettes Will Kill You by Ben Lee, number 2. And number 1, Pretty Fly for a White Guy by The Offspring.
Oh,
yeah. So I can say... Like, I would... Girls Like That, song formerly known as Heavy Heart, they should be the top three.
Yeah, well, I don't understand how these things work, but...
Oh, people just vote.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. All right. Anything else you want to say about the song?
Well, no, but we are playing with Custard quite a bit at the moment, and I must admit, I'm really enjoying them as a live band much more than I did in the 90s. I think they're much... Either they're better or... I don't know, they just seemed... The songs were really standing up.
Yeah.
Which I was surprised about.
They released stuff... Something about, I don't know, about 10 years ago, I'm going to say. And there was a song on it called Contemporary Art.
Okay.
Such a great song. So it's written by the drummer, not Dave.
All right.
And it's a great song.
Oh, I have listened to it.
And it's one of those songs that I'm like, if they released this in their time of like Girls Like That, it would have been
a
hit.
Okay. People just, I wonder if they're still playing it.
Move on.
I might ask for them to play.
Yeah, request it.
Yeah.
If you're going to go see Custard, Regurgitator, Dizzy of Death Rays, ask, Contemporary Art while Custard are on. All right. Next song. We talked on 2 weeks ago as well. This is the song that followed The Impression That I Get, their big song. They broke up, this band. They were together up until last year. They broke up because the lead singer, anti-vax. This is the Mighty Mighty Boss Stones and their song, The Rascal King. Bit of Scar.
Wasn't that long ago that I was talking about Scar, actually, with my our live mixer, Greg.
Is he a fan?
He is, yeah. Maybe not of the... I don't know about what he thinks of this band, but he's a big fan of Sublime. And
yeah. There's the two schools of it. So it's like the Specials.
Yeah.
And then there's American.
I love the Specials.
Yeah. And then there's the American kind of...
Yeah.
And I think that's the same as punk. There's like... Even though like you've got the Ramones, and then it went over to the UK.
Yeah.
But then it went back with like, you know, Minor Threat, like all those kind of... And then that... melded into
pop
Blink
punk
182s
and
yeah. Sum 41s and all that kind of stuff. But I think like metal and ska, maybe the two music fans who that's their genre and they're sticking with it.
Yeah,
they don't move out of that. Like, which is
I kind of appreciated No Doubt's take on it though.
Yeah,
they were like a little bit more all over the place.
Yeah. No Doubt haven't come up yet. I thought they would have, but they haven't been on the podcast yet.
Oh, right.
Because I do another one, Hit Machine, and I think they're on that one.
Okay.
That's the Patreon one.
Right.
So we talked about them last week, or 2 weeks ago, the band, and a lot of they're from Boston, of course. They're called the Mighty Mighty Bostones. They were originally just called the Bostones.
Okay.
A barman said, you should call yourself the Mighty Mighty Bostones.
Because and they were drunk enough to say yes.
They went, yep. They were pretty big.
Yeah, yeah.
For a ska band.
Definitely.
And Dickie Barrett, the lead singer, didn't enjoy it at the time. Okay?
He didn't enjoy the fame.
He said, it was great, but at the time, I didn't probably enjoy it the way I should have. I thought the sky was falling in and it was the end. I thought, oh my God, everyone knows who we are now. We were rude boys from Boston and we weren't supposed to be popular. And all of a sudden we were. I didn't want us to be known as sellouts. We did the same thing we'd always been doing. It was just that people gave a shit all of a sudden. Then I realized it wasn't so bad. I learned that the people who supported us before were proud of us and thought we deserved it. Pop music joined us on our terms and we didn't join pop music on its terms.
Mm.
When you, because you were saying 98, you were not in a good space.
More just the band in personal relationships. When you tour that much, yeah. You just get tired. And then you don't really appreciate it. You don't realize the position you're in and how much like... how lucky you are, I think.
Was there a push from the label to break America?
Initially, but I just said no.
Yeah.
I just said, I'm in a relationship with someone I like being with and I don't want to be away for 6-7 weeks,
I think that's the...
at a time.
What I've noticed is as soon as they start trying to push America and you're like, it's such a big country and so many dates. Just back
around that
back
time, a lot of the Australian bands that went over, they were just wasting all the money they made here as well and not really making a dint.
Yeah.
So we're just like, what's the point?
In comedy, it's the same as doing Edinburgh Fringe.
Right.
You go over there and you're like, oh, well, you'll spend $10,000. You're like,
yeah.
You'll be in debt $10,000, but you can come back and people are like, oh, wow, you did well over there. And it's like, well, I've got bills to pay here. I'd rather just pay my bills and have people here see me.
I mean, I think that put a lot of pressure on my band members, though, because they were both pretty keen.
Yeah.
And so I think they were pretty disappointed at the time. And I think they did well to hide it from me. Maybe I just wasn't listening.
Yeah.
But I think it did put extra pressure on us at the time, for sure.
It's so hard. Mm. Like with, cause it was three in the band, but was there any extra touring members? Or
only by 98, Shane, I think, had been with us, and he's playing with us now as well. And he was really helpful to be there because some days on stage, just no one was looking at each other, and he was the only ray of sunshine basically that kept us together. I think, but yeah, I just after doing that American tour with Helmet and the Melvins, I'm like, oh man! And then we did another one around Europe with another American band called Filter.
Yep.
And it was the same. It's just, it becomes like a real drag.
Yeah.
If you're not getting along, especially, and you're just like, wow, I don't think many people are getting us. It seemed like a very kind of, our sense of humor and it just didn't seem to come across to Americans in particular. I just thought we would be wasting our time over here.
Also, I think Australians go over there and are like, oh, we're fucking, we're shit. and Americans don't get that. Like, oh, I okay, we won't.
Oh man, there were so many of those kind of like they're really positive and optimistic on the face of it. You know, everyone was back slapping us, and we're like, what is this? And then you'd use the word cunt over there, and like really hardcore metal dudes would come over and go, sorry, mate, we don't use that word here. You know, you'd be like, what? Okay, sorry about that.
Can I say, I'm going to ask this, but on unit, you have I'll Lick Your Asshole.
Yeah.
You guys were so advanced. Like, butt play is now common. But back then, this was
a total this accidental. Was like, it was an accidental sample loop mistake that we just ran with. But that was the kind of thing. And like you said, most of these big songs, Polyester Girl was pretty much written on a groove box in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And the whole album was written in 3 weeks. For a sophomore record, we just did not overthink this one at all. The so house was demolished 2-3 days later.
So it was the album after that? That was...
Art was after.
Art, yeah.
Yeah.
And then when did you guys go in the bubble? When was that?
That wasn't until... I don't know. There was like one that we mixed with Andy Gill from the Gang of Four after that one. And then I think Mishmash was... I can't remember where. I got a really bad memory.
How long were you in the bubble for as well?
3 weeks.
Yeah. So, how were the band with that? Who had the idea? Was it Channel V first?
No, it was really Paul that came to them with it. And we were like, oh yeah, we can do this.
Yeah.
I quite enjoyed the experience. It was the most surreal thing I've ever done.
I think I went to, it was at Fed Square. For those who don't know, it was at Fed Square. They were in a bubble. They were recording an album. So you just go, walk past and you see Regurgitator in there just... working on an album.
It was really weird. Really weird. Jabba was in there as well, which is pretty... That was probably the hardest thing, to be honest.
All right. This is first appearance by the band. Not the first appearance by the lead singer on the album. This is Welsh band Catatonia, lead singer Cerise Matthews, and this is their song, Road Rage.
Catatonia. It's pretty low vibe.
It builds. Chorus is actually really good. I had a flatmate who loved this album. He loved Space, which was she guested on. And he also loved this song in particular.
Yeah, right.
Mainly because he liked doing a Welsh accent and rolling his R's.
Oh, yeah, I know this song. Yeah, that's definitely a hit. For some reason I thought they were a goth band. I don't know why.
Alright, there we go. So that this song won the Q Awards Song of the Year in 98.
Okay.
Yeah, got to number 5 in the UK charts. It was written by band member Mark Roberts. Based on the murder of a man called Lee Harvey by his girlfriend in December 96. She stabbed him more than 30 times with a penknife and then claimed he'd been stabbed by a stranger in a road rage accident or attack. And then Lee's mother, Maureen, said this about the song. It's disgusting that people are trying to make money from such a tragedy. My son did not die in a road rage attack. He was killed by Tracy Andrews. We simply do not need songs like this. And so Cerise Matthews actually called her up to apologise.
Wow.
And said, the song's not about... I mean, it started off, but it's not about your son and we're not glorifying what happened. And the mum has since... Because there was a documentary made about it and a book also called Pure Evil. And the mum was like, at least she had the decency to return my call when the others didn't. So Cerise Matthews, well done.
Mm.
So I read some reviews for the song. The best one was they all loved how she rolled her R's. I can't do that.
I can't actually pick that up on the laptop, but
no, yeah. So, I think as she goes further into the song, she really gets into the chorus. It builds and builds. But this is the Sunday Mirror gave it 9 out of 10, and they said if Matthew sounded any more Welsh, she'd be a dragon. Another good review. Got to 48 in the Hottest 100.
Yeah.
So it was quite a big hit here as well in terms of like...
Yeah, people, I do recall the song for sure.
This is our last song. This is first time, and I think maybe only time, this band will be on the compilations. This is a band called Fastball, and their song, The Way, starts with some radio static. See if you can pick out Jewel. There you go. So I don't know if she got paid any royalties for that.
Sounds like it's got the most modern production out of all of them.
Sounds good, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Like it's one of those things, I think, as a song, like just playing on acoustic guitar just repeats itself. Like you're actually doing something more interesting in the studio. I just want to play the chorus. So yeah. If they can't recognise it enough, I probably...
Was this their only hit?
In this country it was, yeah.
Yeah.
I think they might still be a band. They're from Austin in Texas. And
it's so got that sound actually.
They'd won their album before, this is from their second album, the album before was kind of a local hit, won Best Pop Record at the Austin Music Awards.
Okay.
Yeah. They went through a bunch of bands before they settled on Fastball. So they were first band name Star 69, then Magneto USA, then Ed Clark's Business Bible.
God.
And then Starchy, and then Fastball.
They sound like they were in the writer's room for a long time there.
Were Regurgitator the first? What would have any band names before Regurgitator?
No, that was it.
That was it.
We just flicked through a dictionary. We're like, that sounds pretty cool.
That's good.
Which is fine, except when you want to explain it to a grandma, it's like, oh, you play music? What's the band's name? Then it's like, oh, well, actually.
Well, it's better than getting offside then before they listen to I'll Lick Your Arsehole or I Piss Alone.
I guess so,
like,
yeah.
So this was from their second album, All the Pain Money Can Buy. And just like the last song, this is based on a true story as well. So quite a grim story. So it was in around Austin, an elderly couple. So one of them had dementia. The other one had just had a stroke. But they were driving to, they liked going to dances. And they were driving to a 50-minute drive to a local dance. And they just kept on driving. And they were missing for like 3 weeks.
What?
And then they found the car down a ravine, but their bodies were like miles away from the car. And
they just walked.
Yeah, they just didn't know what they were doing.
Wow.
Have you seen Beef?
No.
It's on Netflix. Watch Beef. I don't want to give it away.
Beef.
But it's...
It's
Ali Wong and Steven Yeun. Anyway, so Tony Scalzo, I think, is the lead singer. He was fascinated by the story.
Yeah, that's wild.
And everyone was like, oh, how sad. And he's like, oh, you know what? I reckon that's kind of nice. Their last moments
romantic.
Were together. They just kept on driving into the sun. They're away for 3 weeks. Like, just... And because it was like...
You could never really know, though,
miles,
right?
Miles and miles and miles away from where they were meant to be.
Wow. So it's like, I wonder what clicked in their brains. I mean, who collective... Was it collectively thought about? Or they just went, ah, oh, we're going to... One went, let's do this. And the other one was like, okay.
Just keep driving. The family of the elderly couple loved this song. Unlike Road Rage, they were like, yeah, it's such a nice way to think about it. And they're like, yeah, it's like, because everyone was like, oh, it's such a tragic ending. But then like, they spun it to be like, what a nice way. And they're like, yeah, that's how we're going to remember
it. Yeah, sure.
So it got to 48 in Australia on the charts.
Okay.
So, you know, enough of a crossover hit. And then... It got to number one on the Billboard Alternative Rock Charts and it was there for 7 weeks.
Wow.
And then they went on a tour, which was a very 1998 tour, okay? So Fastball, Marcy Playground, Sex and Candy, Sex and...
Yep.
And Everclear.
Ooh. Okay.
So that's... You couldn't get more of a 1998 tour.
That's very 98.
Okay. All right. that is the end of our side B of volume 26. And now what we do, Aquan, at the end of every episode, we go through and you rate whether or not it's a hit or not.
Okay.
So, Hi by Lighthouse Family. Is that a hit in the Kwan universe?
Yeah, I mean, okay, definitely a hit.
All right, Lucky Man by The Verve.
I don't think that's a hit.
Okay, Mama's Trippin' Freedom Mix by Ben Harper.
No. I mean, yes, but only because of the sample.
So you're going to say yes?
Yeah, okay. But only because of the sample.
Thanks, the funky drummer. That's what the drum beat is. I Know Where It's At by All Saints.
Yeah, I like that tune.
Turn Back Time by Aqua.
Yeah, if I didn't know it was by Aqua, I think definitely. Yeah.
All right, Polyester Girl, Regurgitator.
That's debatable.
It's a hit. I'm going to vote there. Okay, The Rascal King by the Mighty Mighty Boss Stones.
I don't really know what constitutes a ska hit, yeah. So I don't know what element there that would make it a...
I mean, we talked over the entire song as well. So
yeah. Is it just because it's a novelty ska song that they just chuck one in every now and again?
I reckon the impression that I get was a hit. I reckon they went, let's try and build this band up. We'll do another song.
Right.
That's the second single. Okay. Road Rage, Catatonia.
Yeah, that's definitely a hit.
That's six. And The Way by Fastball.
Yeah, I think that's a hit as well.
That's 7 out of 9.
Yeah.
That's 77%.
That's right, I could work for a record company.
77% hit, so that's great. Hey, thanks for doing this, Kwan.
Oh, you're welcome, Josh.
Now, you've got shows with Regurgitator touring the country right now?
I do, yeah. Unit shows.
Unit,
so yep. We're playing the full record, start to finish.
From start to finish?
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, with our original keyboard player, Shane.
And Encore, is it just a mix of all
yes,
the best
mixed bag of the rest of the stuff that's worth listening to.
I love that kind of gig. It's great.
You should come along.
I'd love to come along.
Yeah.
I also really like DZ Death Rays, so that'd be great.
Oh, yeah. I'll chuck you on the door on Sunday, maybe. I think Saturday's sold out, so it's perfect. It's at the Forum as well. We've never played the Forum.
Oh, the Forum's great.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I saw Idols there. It was great.
So, oh, yeah, great band.
So, yeah.
Well, I saw Sisters of Mercy there recently.
Nice.
That was wild.
Idols did this great thing where they got everyone on the floor to go either side. And they have a song called Crash. And when he said Crash, he goes, and everyone just ran into the middle and crashed into each other.
Oh.
And I was at the back because I'm 40. And I was like, this is amazing.
That's really insane. Okay.
But they're also coming out again. They must love this. Anyway, so make sure you go get tickets in. So it's Melbourne, Sydney, Brisbane?
Yeah, Sydney is the Roundhouse, I believe.
Yep.
And Brisbane, I can't actually recall. Oh, we've already done it. What am I saying?
I'll put the details for all the shows up in the show notes as well. Hey, thanks so much for doing this. It's been a pleasure. Hey, everyone. If you're not supporting the show on Patreon, you can do that. Go to patreon.com/DYKWIA. This week's episode of Hit Machine is with Broden Kelly, so from Auntie Donna. So make sure you go and listen to that one. Thanks again. We'll see you next time. Bye.
See ya.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.